chance to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? I hope you're well. I hope you're baking lots. I hope you're nice and busy. I hope you're staying healthy and safe. All of that stuff, all bundled up in one. My goodness, we've got a heck of a show for you today. Today I talk with Rachel Wyman, who is amazing. There, I've said it right off the bat within the first minute of the podcast. Rachel Wyman is awesome, and you are going to love this talk, guaranteed. Rachel is the owner of Montclair Bread Company in Montclair, New Jersey. She's also the owner of Gunkin' Donuts in New Paltz, New York. We talk about all of that and more coming up in a couple of minutes. You're really going to like this. Before that, though, just wanted to check in, make sure you were okay. Wanted to give you a couple of updates about Bakers for Bakers. Over the last couple of shows, I've talked about the call that we were going to have in the middle of February, talking about growth at the bakery. Well, we've had that call. That was last week, and it was fantastic. It was a lot of fun. We had about 25 people come on from all over, from Australia to, I'm going to say, Maine, from, you know, east coast of the States all the way wrap around to Perth, Australia, which is pretty awesome. And then we talked about all kinds of things and how different bakery owners were framing growth and thinking about growth and thinking about their business and where they could expand, why they would want to expand, risks involved with it. You know, a lot of talk about staffing and that kind of a thing. And then and talking a little bit from the cottage baker perspective about what growth looks like when you're working solo. It was a lot of fun. Learned a lot, and now folks inside the Bakers for Bakers forum they're off sort of sharing reflections on the call and continuing the conversation in there, which is lovely. And so that call kind of inspired me to keep on hosting these because they're a lot of fun and they're extremely interesting and helpful to folks. The rough plan is to hold a call twice a month, sort of first and third Tuesdays of the month. That's North American Tuesdays would be like Australian Wednesdays. And the next call that we're going to have next week, start of March, is I'm calling it roughly like a getting to know you call. It's just more of a chance to get to meet some new people. We'll have little breakout rooms and stuff, and you can chat and get to know each other and learn a bit about other people's bakeries, share a bit about your own, sort of make some connections that way. And then in 3 weeks' time, sort of the middle of March one, is going to be a call really geared to cottage bakers. You know, the solo folks, the folks baking out of their house, the guys going to markets, that kind of thing. And, you know, let's focus in on sort of the unique challenges and opportunities of the super small cottage baker. And so that'll be fun. And then we'll come up with other themes as folks in the community want to talk about them. That's what we'll do in future months. So that's kind of the plan. Now, why am I telling you this? Well, if you're already a member of Bakers for Bakers, it's something to get excited about. Start booking it off on your calendar. Come to these calls. They're going to be a lot of fun. If you're not a member of Bakers for Bakers, well, hupsha hupsha, let's get going. It's free to join. It's a community of bakery owners and professional bakers from all around the world talking about the craft and talking about the business of baking and helping each other out and making connections and sharing challenges and group problem solving and sharing of opinions and all of that. It is a fun place. It is a friendly place. It's a supportive place. And it's a safe place to come and say, hey, this is what's really going on with my shop. What can I do? What do you see that I can't see? And that's why I started it. And that's what's happening. And so it's a lovely thing. So head over to Bakers for Bakers. That's bakers4bakers.org. It's free to sign up. We'd love to have you. And hope to see you on one of the calls coming up in the next couple of weeks. Okay, Rachel Wyman, this is another friends of friends call, although I felt instantly like I was reconnecting with an old friend of my own. So Stephanie Swan at Modernist Cuisine and was on the show last October when I reached out to her and said, who should I talk to? Boom. She says, you got to talk to Rachel Wyman. And I kind of recognized the name. And then when I saw Montclair Bread Company, it's like, I know this name from Bread Baker's Guild days or maybe an old wheat stock. And so we kind of unpacked that a little bit about where do we know each other from? And then we start talking about Rachel and her journey. And she's had an amazing career in baking, starting out working at places like Bread Alone and Amy's Breads, you know, the big guys, eh? The famous places. Starting Montclair Bread Company 10 years ago, doing amazing things at the bakery, in her community, with running, with serving people in need, with donuts. Rachel actually published a book just last year, last fall, called We'll Run for Donuts, which really brings it all together. You know, the story of the bakery, the story of how donuts have kind of taken over her life for good, how that's connected up with running. It's an amazing story, and she's an amazing woman. I'm so excited to share this talk with you. Let's get right into it. It's Rachel Wyman from Montclair Baking Company in Montclair, New Jersey, and Gunkin' Donuts in New Paltz, New York. Here we go.
I'm surprised that we've never met before. I feel like we've been like circling around the same.
Yeah, I think we've crossed. Well, I don't know if we've crossed paths, maybe in writing. All I know is when I saw Montclair Baking Company, and I've never been to New Jersey or anything like that, but when I saw that name, it's like, oh, I know this name very, very well. And I don't know how. So yeah. And so it was really neat because, it was Stephanie. I was talking with Stephanie Swan back in October, and she said, hey, there's a couple of folks that you should really talk to. And it was like, yeah, of course. And then as soon as I saw Montclair Baking Company, it's like, well, how have we not done this? But anyways, it's nice to meet you. And thanks for taking the time. And I'm a little curious about Montclair because just that sort of area, like it, I was skulking around on the internet and it looks like this very historic kind of really cool, like smaller town. And then I look on the map and it's like, and it's just like part of the whole blob that is New York City. Like, how does that work?
It is. And it, like more and more too. So I was working this corporate job near the Meadowlands and I was commuting from Pennsylvania at the time. And I was just looking for a space that was kind of in between the city where I started baking to where I could have my kids and they could have a diverse range of people around them. Yeah, somebody told me to check out Montclair and I fell in love with it. It has the most green space out of any town in New Jersey, more parks, which is kind of neat, even though it's still pretty urban.
Yeah.
It is very historic.
Yeah, lots of brick. I'm a sucker for brick buildings. Like it's...
Me too. Did you see pictures of the bakery?
Oh, yeah. I did. Every picture, so pictures from the front look amazing. Pictures in the back, it's like, I just want to work there. This should be like a job interview or something because I would work for a brick building because.
That's because so it's, funny.
Oh yeah. Well, because I grew up on the prairies, right? And so there's no brick buildings out there. It's all, you know, it's wood and drywall and it was sod huts before that, right? So even, you know, I live out on the West Coast now on Vancouver Island and there's a lot more brickwork out here. We'll go to a restaurant or we'll go to a cafe. And if it's if there's a brick wall inside or something, I'm just in heaven. I'll sit there all day.
I grew up in Maryland. And it was very colonial.
Yeah.
So I've always been surrounded by brick Yeah. And I never even thought about it, but I like old buildings. And so mine was my bakery was a DMV inspection station.
Really?
Yeah.
How cool is that? Yeah.
Right now, if you look at a picture of Montclair Bread Company, there's these giant steel framed windows on the front of the building. Mm-hmm. And those used to be garage doors where cars could drive through and be inspected. So,
oh, that's the best.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it was just prior to being my bakery. So,
oh, really? Oh, yeah. Well, because it's actually helpful because it's built for open spaces inside, right? Like, See, I grew up my dad used to run a Texaco service station when I was like a kid and stuff. Right. And so I have this really, real, really good image of what the insides might've been like, just, you know, with all the open.
Yeah. And you can still see on the floor, like the outlines of where the lifts were and all of that is still there. And it had to set, it was dormant for several years for it to clear all of the environmental concerns. Sure.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and so when did, we'll go back to front a little bit, but where, or front to back, where, when did you open the bread company?
In May, 2012. So I'm coming up on 10 years.
Congratulations. Yeah. Awesome. The
first space was this tiny little, it was 600 square feet. And I think most of my friends have bathrooms bigger than that now. And it was on Walnut Street in Montclair, New Jersey. And I operated out of that space for 5 years before I was able to move into the bigger space.
Okay.
Which is a half a block away.
Oh, how neat. So growing up in Maryland, was this always going to be your thing? Like, because I know you've worked in some of the big name places before you made your own big name place. Like, was it always going to be baking for you?
Yes, but I didn't know that at the time.
Oh, really?
my grandma made wedding cakes for a living. So I was always around it. She did it out of her home. So it wasn't something I viewed as a professional career at that point. And I was from a really small town where we didn't even have a bakery. So it wasn't something that I considered. And I went to school to study French. With the intention of being a high school teacher.
Oh, okay.
And I did that for a year and I said, enough is enough. And I went to culinary school after that. So baking's always been a huge part of my life. And when I was in college, I sold cookies and brownies to pay my rent.
Oh, really? Okay.
In like traditional college. And then I went to culinary school and sealed the deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's if you grow up in a family where baking is just something that you do, when you need some cash, right? Like becomes well, of course. Yeah. That's just, you know, if you're not sure what to do, like bake something and either hand it out or sell it or something. Yeah.
Right. Well, and like, you know, like I said, in my town, there wasn't a baker. So when my grandmother got married, she made her own cake because there was no other option. And then her cousin was next. So her cousin said, oh, can you make mine? And then all of a sudden, you know, she's doing all the cakes. And, you know, that was still back in the day where there were, you know, birthday parties in the classroom for all the kids. And so she made all the cakes for all the kids. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It grew really quickly into something. You know, even the grocery store in our town didn't make cakes at the time. You know, very, very small. I still think that where I grew up is a good 20 years behind the norm right now.
Right.
So, yeah, if you want to go back in time, Chestertown, Maryland is your place.
It's that real, it's that permanent Mayberry kind of thing. Yeah. So cool.
Definitely. Definitely. my boyfriend came home with me to visit. I feel old to have a boyfriend, but, and he's like, why is everybody waving to us? You know, when we're driving, like, because you wave to every car that passes you. That's just what you do.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I hear you. I hear you. That's sort of like small town Saskatchewan kind of a thing.
Yeah. I mean, most small towns, it's just funny because you don't know, you don't realize it growing up.
Yeah. And everyone, every single person waving at you is taking a note of, they don't know who you are.
Yeah, either that or you get back home to your mom's house and she's like, so I hear you saw, or I hear you were at.
Yeah.
I was there for 5 minutes. Who saw me?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I went to the store beside the post office and the whole town knows you were there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But my wife worked for a couple of years in a really small town north of Regina where we were living, and like 200 people in the whole town. And so, and she was the one outsider. She was working at a school with a boy that needed help. And everybody knew her business, and everybody knew when I came to visit, and everybody knew when I went home. And, you know, it's sheer,
yeah.
Like she got a recap of her whole weekend on Monday in the staff room, right? Because it's like,
right.
Everybody knows. Yeah. It's like, they're all, I think it's well-intentioned. I think they wanted to, you know, protect the new person and make sure she had a good experience, but she found it really creepy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you went to culinary school, when was it going to be baking, or was it right from the start? Or
yeah, it was always baking.
Yeah, it was the thing.
I worked in the or on the hotline in kitchens in college, but mm-hmm. It was never something that I wanted to pursue. I did it because I could, but not because it, where I really wanted to be. I don't like that kind of stress. Which is the same reason I never did restaurant production pastries. I was born a morning person. So I, you know, 8 o'clock hits and I'm in bed no matter what. That style of cooking and, or even baking wasn't ever going to be for me.
Yeah. Get up, get your work done and get on with your day because it's still daytime. Yeah. Oh, so neat. Yeah. Well, I was reading that you did like an apprenticeship at Bread Alone, or you were working there for a while. I've talked to Dan Leader a couple years ago. I chatted with him and tried to get that story because I'd only ever read about it. And what was it like working there?
It was great. I worked there while I was a student at the Culinary Institute. And, you know, as a student at the CIA, when I was a student, you only have 3 weeks of bread baking.
Okay.
And I didn't know that I wanted to pursue bread baking until those 3 weeks. I was going to follow in my grandma's footsteps and make cakes. But by day two in the bake shop, I was sold and knew that there was nothing else I was ever going to do in life but bake bread. And I talked to my instructor and asked him how I could do more, because it became clear from the very beginning that the only way to be a better bread baker is to bake more. So he introduced me to Dan Leader, and I asked Dan if I could work for him, and he said, not so many words, you know, there weren't so many women in the bake shop back in the day. And he offered me a barista position. So I took it because, you know, anything to get my foot in the door. And I showed up 8 hours before every barista shift and fought my way onto the production line with the bakers. And, you know, I was such a mess. I was awful. I would shape one loaf of bread horribly in the time that the other guys had shaped like 8 loaves of bread. Mm-hmm. But I stuck it out, and eventually he let me, you know, be paid to be a baker.
Oh, good for
and,
you.
So I did that the whole time I was at the Culinary Institute, and I actually became very close with Sharon Leader. To this day, she's still one of my closest friends.
Oh, cool.
Mentors, and I adore her.
So. Oh, so nice. Well, it speaks to your perseverance to keep on pushing and keep on going through that. Cause it was a time of life thing. By the time I really got into it, it was kind of in my 40s, and I wasn't able to just take off and leave the kids at home and go, you know, work at a bakery in another town kind of a thing. And so I taught myself, and that was the long path, man. Like, you know, and to this day, like I'll be working around other bakers and I think I'm nailing it. And then they'll just like, you know, three times as fast.
Yeah. I spend a lot of time apologizing for that, you know, because I have like people who are just starting and, or, you know, interns and you know, I'm using two hands and they're using one and I'm the one, I'm like, it's okay. I'm so sorry. I just don't know how to, this is the only way I know how to do it. If I don't use both hands, one won't function.
So, that's right. Yeah.
Like, it's okay that you're slower. Just keep going. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, get good, then you can get fast kind of a thing.
Yeah. 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 Exactly.
Well, and then you worked at Amy's for a while?
For a long time, for 5 years. That was after culinary school. And I think I was on the job for maybe 6 or 8 weeks when one of the assistant production manager went on maternity leave and I got bumped up into that role. And then there wasn't an overnight production manager at the time. And I quickly moved into functioning as that. And then Amy gave me the opportunity to manage the overnight bread production, which was incredible. I was 26 years old. And that was like my life goal at the time, you know, that I thought I would never achieve. And here I am, you know, in at Amy's Bread in New York City. And she gave me this incredible opportunity and nurtured me through all the growing pains. So
cool. Oh yeah. Yeah. She's amazing. I took a class from her at Wheatstock 2012. So it would have been right when you opened up Montclair. It was at the one in Chicago.
Oh, I was there.
Were you there? Well, yeah, that's where we met. Yeah. Because we had the retail bakery then, and it was our first trip away. We'd been open 18 months and Cindy and I both got drawn for that, for that Wheatstock. And so we left the bakery to the crew and we came away for the first time, right?
Yeah. I think I got in off the waiting list that year, like at the last minute.
Yeah. Well, and it was our first ever like kind of guild thing that, mm-hmm. you know, we went away for. And I didn't know at the time how lucky we were that like both our names got pulled from the draw. Like it was like the golden ticket, but yeah. So we went to that and it was just so much fun. I took a sourdough class from her and just, so it was just, well, it was just awesome. It was just awesome. That was where I really got into where she taught me how to make about 6 products out of the same dough. It's like, right. these can be twists and these can be rolls and these can be loaves. And it was sort of like, yeah, of course they can. Right.
Yeah. Work smarter.
Yeah. Much. It's like we came back and our product line grew tremendously without much more work. Yeah, she's I have this theory that there's only like about a handful of people in North America that everybody's sort of touched these folks, or they've touched so many bakers around them. And Amy's one of those pillars.
Absolutely. And in fact, everyone on the crew, or I would say 80% of the crew who I worked with at the time have their own bakeries now.
Yeah.
Like in some, not, you know, all over, but
yeah,
which is pretty incredible.
Oh yeah. Oh, totally. Isn't that a testament to the way that you kind of run the place, right? Like,
absolutely.
Like when we had our bakery, it was sort of like, if we could build the team that could hang on together for 3 years, we were rocking it, you know, like we were winning. And then to have the vision to say, okay, yes, and we're going to form this great team, but also as part of this, we're going to start, people are going to go on and do their own thing.
Yeah.
You know, well, then I think she wrote in her book once that was why they expanded. Maybe the second time was sort of like the team was getting more mature and they were getting more together. We needed more things for them to do, or else they were going to leave.
Absolutely. And it's funny, Joanne Chang, she said the same thing about Flour. That's why she opened the second one. And I also just opened a second location in New Paltz, New York. And it's the same thing. I want to be able to elevate my team.
Yeah.
And I can't do it without expanding. So.
Yeah. And why doesn't everybody get to grow as much as they want to grow? Right. And,
right.
One of those awful podcast questions that I was going to ask you was just that sort of, you know, why are you still doing it or whatever? But that's kind of,
I don't know. I don't know. I wake up every morning and ask myself the same thing.
You know, there's some buddies of mine and I were going to be talking tomorrow about sort of growth and growth plans and stuff at their bakeries. And it's like, and the one person's like, why do I need to grow? I'm trying to understand this, right? Like maybe I'm okay where I'm at.
Yeah.
But it's like, but that is one potential answer to the question, right?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Just to say like, keep the team pushing themselves as much as they want to be, as much as they want to take on new things. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was funny too, because it was that wheat stock, in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I think Anne, Burgunder and, Abe Faber hosted a bakery talk together. And Anne's side was kind of like the grow side, and Abe's side was the keep it the same side.
Right.
And it was at the time I'd always thought the only way to be better in business was to grow, until I heard Abe talk about his experience, and it really resonated with me. And that's kind of when I decided that expanding wasn't my plan.
Right.
You know, opening multiple locations was no longer my plan. I was just going to grow as much in my four walls as possible. And, I wanted to relocate my family. Mm-hmm. And the only way to finance that was to open another bakery.
Oh, okay.
And also to really help my team expand on what their knowledge and be able to offer them more competitive pay and all of that. And,
sure.
You know, that comes with more responsibilities. Yeah. But, you know, why am I still doing this? I think I don't really know how to do much else. And now my kids are fully folded into the operation and they enjoy it. And I think they would be heartbroken if we did anything else.
Yeah. How old are your kids now?
They are 10, 12, and 13.
Oh, yeah.
And my 13-year-old, she goes to work with me at 3 o'clock on the weekends, 3 a.m. on the weekends by choice to help me. And she has her sights on culinary school as well. She's very interested in the savory side of things. And I mean, not just because she's my kid, but she really can do everything that anyone on the team can and teach other people how to do it too. You know, I have a video of her using the sheeter when she was like 6 years old.
Wow.
Like standing on a milk crate to use the sheeter.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, I think you have a point about like, if you did something else that the kids wouldn't be bought into that. Our daughter, I'm trying to do the math quick in my head, but when we opened, she would be a little bit older. I think when we opened our place, she was, I'm going to say maybe 15, mm-hmm. but then she started working at the bakery and railed against us opening because it was cramping her lifestyle. And she had to start getting rides to places because we couldn't take her to places.
I've been there.
And then when we closed, she was like, you've destroyed my identity.
Yes.
This was where I worked, because she worked shifts in the afternoons in the back. And all my friends know me as Robin the Baker and all of this stuff. And it's so we got the what did you do to me on both ends.
So
on the one hand, maybe you can't win. But on the other hand, it's just a brilliant that everybody's in and involved or enjoying being involved and stuff. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And it seems to me you found a way to sort of expand without expanding beyond your four walls, or at least into the surrounding neighborhood, with things like, I don't know, I saw a picture of a pizza oven that looked just killer. The events you're doing in the community and that kind of stuff. Was that always sort of part of the philosophy when you opened your place, that it's like, we're going to be the, like an anchor point in the community?
Kind of, yes and no. So I kind of bounced around a lot when I was a kid and never really, you know, I never really connected in my hometown. And then, you know, college, and then I moved around a lot before I lived in the city. I never really felt like I was part of a community. And I mean, part of that was I always worked around the clock. So I always felt a part of my kitchen community, but, you know, I didn't feel deep roots anywhere. And I really wanted that. I wanted to create a space that people enjoyed coming to every day and felt like it was an extension of their home. So I didn't really have a plan on how to do that. I just continually see needs and I try to fill them. So, you know, like the pizza oven, well, I really like pizza. who doesn't want a wood-fired oven to like bake pizza? And it took me 8 years to build up the capital to purchase that. And that was huge. And I have this really nice patio space in front of my bakery. And there's nowhere in my town for me to go to dinner and have a really awesome meal and let my kids run around and not disrupt other diners. And so I realized I have that space and I can set that up. And then it turns out other people wanted the same thing. And so that took off. And then, you know, I started hosting these 5K races because I noticed that my biggest consumer group on the weekends were people who were meeting their friends for runs and getting donuts after. So I wanted to give back to them. So I hosted this little, you know, donut run and 125 people signed up in 2 weeks. And then I thought I was going to get shut down by the police. I didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't a runner at the time. And then, you know, and then I made it an annual event and now it sells out to 3,000 people in a couple hours and we're making like 10,000 donuts, you know.
Oh my gosh.
It's insanity. But it wasn't something that wasn't my goal. I just wanted to like do something really fun and give back to the people who had been giving to me.
Yeah.
I think that's why I've been successful because it's never been with the intent of, you know, making a huge profit. It's just been, you know, filling these needs in my community because no one else is.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. It's not sitting there saying, you know, boy, that runner segment, I think we could really exploit that. Yeah.
Yeah, we could really capitalize off that. I really like those sweaty dollar bills.
Yeah, let's get that up on the whiteboard. What else you got? Oh, yeah.
Well, and honestly, it's always like, you know, you'll notice like, wow, for instance, right now, there's a whole lot of realtors coming in on the weekends with clients who are new here. What can we do to better provide for them? And it's not about like, oh, how can we make money? It's like, well, what do they need from us that we could simplify and, you know, make it easier on our staff, make it easier on them and give them a great experience. And so we're working on making these little like, you know, name cards for all of the realtors in town. So if they stop by to buy something for their clients, everybody gets coffee, you know,
nice.
And we treat them to coffee because then that's a transaction my staff doesn't have to deal with. They get coffee, you know, everybody's happy. And it's, you know, serving that purpose in the community.
Yeah. Well, and if you want to build that spirit of people coming in thinking that this is our place, like this is my place. So then you've got the realtors and this is, you know, bringing in the new client. This is my place that I come to and it can be yours too. And
yeah,
I don't know, for me, that's the, one of the real best parts of having your own place is that you can set it up so that other people think it's their special place too.
Yeah. I mean, it backfires sometimes. Like when I have to kick people off my patio when we're closed and like, you know, I had a guy screaming at me because this is a community space. And I was like, well, it's still private property and I have to pay insurance and no one's here to protect you. So you gotta go.
Yeah, I guess so. That's true.
Like I'm not hanging out on your front porch. So.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and I'm surprised. I'm shocked actually that you said that you weren't a runner when you started the run, because I've seen some other stuff about you. It's like you are a serious runner. Like you are like you are in it now. And so, how did that happen?
Well, I hosted this run. And oh my gosh, so it was we were at 4,000 likes on Facebook, and at the time that was like, what, you know? So I hosted a 4K fun run, and I didn't know that wasn't something that existed in the world because I was not a runner. And it's like, you know, just over 2 miles, which seemed absurd to me to begin with, that somebody would run that far. And I, all the people were signing up and they're like, yeah, we're going to run some miles before. And then I'm like, you know, you have to run 2 miles when you get here and you're going to run miles before that. And then I thought that it was heartless of me to send these people out to run and not go with them. So I did, and it wasn't so bad. And I met some people and we talked during the run, which I didn't know was possible. And like, that was kind of fun. And one of my bakers, she was a runner, she was a marathoner. And I told her when I got back, I was like, that was pretty fun. And she said, yeah, you should sign up for a race and it'll keep you motivated to like keep going out for more runs, and because you have a goal. And she said, so pick something like 3 months from now that you can sign up for, and then you can work towards it. You know, for most people, that would be a 5K. I signed up for a half marathon.
In 3 months? Oh, there you go.
I mean, what's 13 miles? And, you know, and it kind of sealed the deal. So 11 months after my 4K, I ran the New York City Marathon.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. And are you... You're triathloning a bit too?
I am. I did a couple half Ironman triathlons last fall. I'm doing another one this fall. I'm running the Boston Marathon in April, which I'm really excited about.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. Those are proper things. Like, you have to qualify and stuff.
I did.
Those,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Fantastic. That's not like... Our rinky dink one back in Saskatchewan there, where you just show up and they give you a bib. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, good for you. Well, and then there is, like you say, there's a certain relationship between endurance athletics and donuts. Like
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we, you know, I started this running club called Fueled by Donuts. Mm-hmm. That first 5K that I hosted that sold out to, you know, the first one was 1500 people. I know. And we had to shut it down because I didn't know if I could make that many donuts at the time. But it was funny. It sold out to my customers, and like 80% of them had never run a 5K before. They just really wanted to come and eat donuts.
Really?
Yeah. So then I started a running club that meets at the bakery to keep those people interested in running. Just like I, you know, because it had been my first race too. So, I came back and kept at it. So I wanted others to do the same or to have the same motivation.
Yeah.
And so we have the Fueled by Donuts running club.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. Well, and because you're to find that thing about your customers that they were that interested that they would do the run is what a story. Like, you know, I was pretty proud of myself when I lobbied our landlord to put in a bike rack because people were biking to the bakery and we thought, we were on top of it. This is that's really inspiring. What an idea. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to say, I did just before opening my bakery. Actually, I completed my MBA in June, and I opened the bakery in May. So like a month after, and I have to say that was a key takeaway from that program, was really paying attention to who your consumer is and making sure that you're targeting the right consumer and not what you want your consumer to be, but who your consumer actually is.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Like in theory, you know, I think this is who it is, but to actually spend enough time with your customers and dialogue with them and know what, you know, their wants and needs are helps you to fulfill them.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if you can do cheaper, just call them cheaper experiments, you know, and try things like, we didn't have much patio space or anything. We didn't have any seating in the bakery and just a tiny patio on a busy street. It wasn't very appealing, but we put some tables out there and it was fine. But we had some really nice lawn in the back of our unit. And so one summer we, went thrift shopping and got a whole bunch of picnic blankets or things that would could be picnic blankets and had them at the bakery, then said, you know, if you want to take a blanket and go sit on the grass, you can, right? And other than staff, I don't think anyone took us up on it over the course of the summer. But it's like, yeah, we were out like $20 worth of blankets, right?
We try. Yeah, you tried in there and there's exactly, there's no loss there. Yeah, I've done a lot of that over the years. And it's funny because everybody thinks that, you know, I've heard it before, like anything I touch is gold and I'm wildly successful. It's like, you only hear about the stuff that didn't flop. Like nobody's writing about like the 99 other things over here that were total flop.
Yeah, exactly. And you need those 99 bad ones.
Yeah.
I help coach a workshop on storytelling and people are so resistant, or some people are so resistant to write at the start, right? And it's like, well, I don't have any good stories. It's like, okay, write some bad ones. You know, because it's like, just put something down and you'll be better, right? Go on the 4K run before you have really computed how long a 4K run is. Just go. Fantastic.
Because you get halfway out there, you got to come back somehow.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right. You're kind of committed at this point. Especially if it's a loop, you're doing the whole course now. Yeah. So cool. I read an article about you on even just doing other kind of outreach stuff in the community. It's like when you did an event for government workers that went kind of bigger. That sounds like the trend again. Oh, well, that got bigger than we expected.
Oh my gosh.
What was the circumstances of that? Being Canadian, I missed the details there.
Good for you. The government shut down because they were arguing over budgets or something. And so government employees were not getting paid. And it went on for several weeks
where
government employees were not getting paid.
Okay.
And so my bakery is in Essex County, New Jersey, which is also where Newark Airport is.
Okay.
And so the TSA staff are government workers and they weren't getting paid.
Okay.
And, you know, all of us were watching. I mean, we've got this dope in the office and all of us are like watching and just like, you know, biting our nails and angry and wanting to do something and feeling helpless. Like, well, I can feed people. And I think I put it up on my personal Facebook page or something. Like, anybody know anybody who can connect me with somebody at the TSA, I'd really like to drop off some coffee and donuts for those folks, you know, and treat them to something because it must be really crap. It must be a kind of a tough job all the time, but really crappy when you're not getting paid for it.
Yeah.
So somebody knew somebody like the head of like, you know, the security for actually. So I got connected to the head of security for the Port Authority, which is all New York airports and New Jersey and Newark Airport.
Yeah.
They connected me with somebody else. And, you know, before I knew it, I'm like, I have all of the contact names for all the security officials at each of the terminals. I know exactly how many employees are working on each shift at each terminal. So I boxed up donuts per shift. And I'm thinking, you know, how many people can, 2,000 people. Our TSA agents at Newark Airport. So we dropped off donuts and coffee and fresh fruit and, you know, and I made these deliveries and they were so happy. And I was like, you know what, guys, I'm coming back next week. Like I will be here every week until you guys are getting a paycheck. And they were telling me their stories. I was meeting people. It was just like, I mean, this phenomenal experience that I got the opportunity to do this. And then, you know, my community found out what I was doing and they wanted to pitch it. And the first delivery that I made for 2,000 people, it was me and my kids making donuts day that the bakery would have been closed. Because I didn't want to put any like undue stress on my staff.
Sure. Yeah.
So
yeah. We just have, by the way, we're just making an extra 2,000 donuts today.
Right. Right. Yeah. And brewing like God knows how many gallons of coffee. So yeah. So I did that. And then people started pledging donations to help me pay for this. And then I thought, well, you know, let's take lunch next time. We make bread, you know? So I had community volunteers coming in to make sandwiches. I had, And we were making donuts and coffee for everything. And people were pledging their support. And I had it where you could sponsor a lunch. So it was like you could donate $5 through our website and it sponsored a lunch. And we did all of these bagged lunches. And then the media found out, and the Senator Menendez from New Jersey held a press conference at the bakery.
Oh, wow.
With a group of government employees who weren't getting paid from all over the state. And so we met a couple of the officers from Fort Dix, the penitentiary.
Okay.
And so none of the guards were getting paid. I mean, and here we're like 4 or 5 weeks with them not getting a paycheck at all. And I don't know about you, but like I couldn't pay my bill if I went a month without getting paid, you know, then, and they were telling their story and I was really touched by that. And I was like, well, let's feed them lunch too. How many more people could that be? 1,000 more people. So then our local PBA got involved and they have this big like trailer. So they let us load everything into their trailer and they transported everything down. And then I think it was like the following week, everybody actually got, you know, started getting paid again and it was over. But yeah, it was 3 weeks of deliveries that we made.
Wow. Okay. So good for you. Good for you to like, okay, I've asked the question, this is how big it is. And I guess, well, I guess that's what we're doing then.
Yeah.
You know, like, cause that would be a decision point right there. It's like, can I actually pull this off? But
yeah,
way to mobilize. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, and again, it's just that it seems that's sort of core to your nature is like, okay, I see something over here. I can't unsee it now. What are we going to do?
Right.
I know how to feed people. Right. You know, it's sort of like, well, and just in the story, you're good at a lot of things clearly, but it's like at the core, it's like, okay, I feed people. Right. So that's how we're going to solve it. Yep. How do we feed them? You know, you know, and I was talking on the show with Guy Frankel. So he's over in California, does Say Your Bread, and he started a charity called Cast Your Bread during COVID. And that was his whole thing. It was like, well, COVID's hit, people are going hungry. Well, I can bake bread, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, so, well, I bake bread. And he found a charity that was already doing food hampers. It's like, well, I can bake bread. And he was doing it out of his garage at the time. Right. And it's like, well, here's 40 loaves. How many more hampers are you doing? Oh, I better phone some people, you know, and before you know it, it's like everybody in the community is baking bread to put in these hampers to give to folks. But it's sort of like once he saw the need, you can't unsee it. And then, so what are you going to do about it? So, well, good for you. That's so cool. It seems like with everything you do, you have to put 2 zeros on the end of how big you think it is.
I know. And now we know that. So it's funny because people say like, oh, can you mention, but I was like, wait. Okay. If I mention you in my newsletter, like, are you ready for that? Are you sure you can handle that? Like, I'm not trying to be, you know, alarmist here, but.
Be careful what you wish for. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you shared the story because we've got some the regular garbage going on here in Canada now around COVID and stuff. Yeah. And it's nice to put the reality. This is the reality of the situation for people in their jobs when, you know, you goofballs are scoring political points in Washington, right? And it's like on the news, it's a number.
Yeah.
You're getting in there and actually meeting the people. And that's a big difference, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of COVID, how did that kind of affect the bakery and affect you and that kind of thing?
So we, you know, when everything shut down, first it was the school and our school was like, oh, we're just going to close this Friday to come up with a plan and we'll see you Monday. And then like 2 years later, the kids are finally back in school. You know, I met with my leadership team. I have 10 full-time employees. And then, you know, now I have about 10 part-time employees. At the time I had 30 employees going in.
Wow.
Since COVID, I've reduced my hours. I've reduced my operating days and things like that. So I don't need as many part-time employees because of that. And that's why I reduced my hours and reduced my days. But so going into it, we have 30 people on the schedule. places are starting to shut down. And I met with my leadership team. So there were four of us meeting, and I said, look, I don't have any other way of feeding my family. This is the only income that I have. So if it comes down to it, I'm going to come in here and bake by myself and do whatever I can do and sell it. And then at least I'll have enough income to continue to support my family, because there's no like work from home option. You know, I don't have, you know, a partner. It's just me, three kids trying to survive. There's no other revenue stream for my household. So, my kind of right hand, my director of operations, she's like, well, I'm coming in too. And then the retail manager was like, well, I'll come in. So there's three of us. And then my other baker was like, I'm not sitting at home. Like, you know, so we had the four of us, and then we went out to the rest of the group and said, look, everybody's job is secure. This is the full-time staff.
Yeah.
The rest were students. So I didn't cut anybody that had to go home and feed a family, you know? So we went out and told our part-timers that we were, you know, going to suspend their hours. And at the time we already had some parents calling us because they were concerned about their high schoolers, you know, being around people. And so that it wasn't a huge, huge deal, but we did cut, you know, we cut 20 people.
Yeah, sure.
And there were 10 of us. And normally I would kind of, you know, I worked hands-on on the weekends, and then I was in the office most of the rest of the week. Jessica, my director of operations, she was in the office 100% of the time, unless it was like a holiday and she was handing out orders. The two of us quickly became full-time, 100% production. And then there were eight others. So there were 10 of us total, including my boyfriend, who is an entertainment photographer for Getty and the Associated Press.
Okay.
Which obviously that dried up quick.
Yeah.
So he was one of the 10, and the 10 of us worked. Oh my, I've never worked so hard in my life. I've never baked more bread in my life. I know it's a bread company, but bread, you know, we sell 80% of our business is donuts.
Whoa.
That quickly dropped down to like 20%. And we were baking bread like around the clock. When I say around the clock, that oven wasn't empty ever. We would just keep changing out shifts. And then we started selling groceries and, you know, flour and fruit and vegetables and, you know, and it's like, we're just going to keep going until they tell us we can't. And we're just going to, and we were selling out of the maximum we could put out with those 10 people a week ahead of when we were producing it. So every day when we got up to go into work, everything we did was already spoken for a week ago, because there was such supply shortages at the grocery store. But we never had any issues getting ingredients in bulk. So, you know, it's like, let's just keep getting them out there to as many people as possible.
And this was all sort of out the window to your customers, like coming picking up then?
Yeah, we have that gorgeous patio space.
Right, so yeah.
Set up tables across the patio and put orders out in alphabetical order, and people would come like walk by at their designated time. Like we would set out all the 9 o'clock orders and then all the 10 o'clock orders. And then, you know, so it was like shifts of time and then alphabetical. So there was no contact, and we were running things out to people's cars too. And they'd pop the trunk and we'd put things in there. And it was a lot of months like that.
Wow.
It was a long, yeah. I felt like I still like think back to that time and it just feels like we went to war. I mean, it was the hardest thing I've ever lived through until Omicron. And when Omicron hit, you know, then it's like, I just lost my entire staff. Everybody's at home quarantining. Customers aren't nice anymore. They want it now. They're, you know, in the beginning, people were willing to wait or do anything because they understood, you know, and now they don't care what's going on behind the scenes. They just want it now and want to know why they can't have it. Yeah. And people are yelling, and it's the holiday season, so they're even louder yelling and nasty. And so, you know, it's funny because 2 years ago, I'm like, I'll do whatever it takes. I'll do whatever I can. And then in December, I'm like, fuck it all. We're closing. Like done. I'm not doing it again. So we closed for 2 weeks and let everybody quarantine and then came back after that. And it killed us. It's like my bank account has never been in more dire straits than it has been this month. I think this past weekend probably got us out of the danger zone, but it's been really, really bleak.
Yikes.
Because at least in the beginning, we had all of the support from the government programs to help us.
And yes.
And then we didn't necessarily, it really helped us then because we had equipment breaking down and, you know, all of that stuff, but we also had the revenue because we were selling food. Now you don't have that because the grocery stores are open again. So you don't have this excess revenue and you've got no buffer and you're closing down every other day.
Well, it's so funny you mention that because I've been feeling that same thing. In Canada, it was similar, but a little bit different. But those early days were exactly that. It was like the government was like, here's the program. We need you all to stay home, you know, that kind of thing. And so here's the program. And it was tougher for a lot of the food service folks because their staff stayed home, right. You know, and then it was so scary to come back and when do you reopen? And so the bakeries kind of retooled and did like what you did, right?
And luckily bakeries were set up as a to-go business. It wasn't of the finer dining places that weren't prepared for
that. Yeah, like restaurants were done and in BC, like just straight up bars are still in huge trouble. You know, they're still essentially closed or close to closed. But now it's like everyone's getting sick. they're missing work like crazy. And so, okay. And I don't know, I've got some friends with sort of long COVID repercussions and stuff. And so it's not pretty when you do get, you're going to get sick and you're rolling the dice about how bad it's going to be when you get it. Mm-hmm. And everyone's just scrambling. Like it's just sort of like, everyone's like, oh, there's nothing we can do. Well, it's like, but you could before. What changed?
You're paying sick leave for anybody quarantining and then you're paying for the people who are coming in, but there's no sales because it's January. So
yeah. Oh yeah. It's,
it is the worst possible scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're exactly right. It's like the customer tolerance for all of this stuff is gone. Like it ended around November and that's a real tough one for sure. And then, you know, hopefully the spring coming and all of that will help a little bit and just get.
Yeah. Well, I've been trying to just raise awareness in my community about it and kind of sound the alarm with the town council and things like that. Like, it's not okay. We are not okay. And we need you to push for more programming for us. I mean, even if it's just like the paid sick leave thing, you know, is there a way that we could subsidize that while people are quarantining because it's a public health concern or, you know, drop off some test kits for us or, you know, like anything, just something to show that you recognize that we're in the shit and it really sucks.
Totally. Totally. And you can't do your business remotely and isolated. Like you just, you know, like it's no different than, you know, at our schools here. If you're going to keep the schools open, you've got 60, 70 staff in there and 100 or 600 kids, they're all getting it. You know, you know what I mean? Like you've got to do something for them. And the same here, you can't make what you make without several people in the same room. And it's, you know, and one person gets it, you're all going to get it. It's just.
You know what's interesting about that? You know, we wear masks inside and it's funny, I'm sure you can relate to this and with people that you've spoken to. When nobody could find masks, we had them because our mixing team always wears masks. And it's funny because we're like, hey guys, remember the stash that we had? You know, we've had, I would say 90% of the staff has had COVID at this point. No one has transferred it at the bakery.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, that makes me feel pretty good about what we've set up.
What we need to do then is start a theory about this is yet another power of sourdough culture. that I don't even want to say that as a joke. I'll edit this out because someone will pick it up and say, like, yeah, out of my street corner, there's going to be an ivermectin sign and a sourdough culture sign now, but and the government doesn't want you to know about. But we've got
so your theory is that the sourdough absorbs it all. We bake it off in the oven.
Yeah, yeah. Hard proof between Mark and Rachel that a strong, a robust sourdough culture is a shield for COVID. There.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks. Come on. This brought to you by, I'll get a sponsor for this one episode. Exactly. Yeah, this brought to you by Piranos. It's like they've got it in Belgium in their lab.
Yeah, lock and
key. Yeah, they're lock and key. They're gonna right beside the Altamura sourdough. It'll be the COVID shield. Yeah, geez. Okay, we'll come back in 6 months and see how this story has spread and.
You'll get an idea of your listenership.
Yeah, exactly. This will be my social proof that this podcast is popular. Oh my God. I must be getting weary of COVID because I'm getting morbid. But yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, I know.
Awesome. Well, it's just been so much fun talking with you. My goodness. I really love your energy. There's nothing makes me smile more than talking with someone that had an idea. So yeah, well, we should just do this thing. And then it just takes off and is amazing. And it just seems to happen to you again and again and again. And it's just awesome. Yeah. So I guess last question is looking forward to the rest of this year. Is it just kind of digging out of the hole for COVID, or is there something that's kind of keeps you inspired to keep on going, pushing forward with this?
Yeah, you know, actually, because of COVID and because I've opened this new location, and it's, so I opened up a separate shop in New Paltz, New York, and it's in the Hudson Valley, the lower Hudson Valley, where I rock climb and run. It's called Gunkin' Donuts with a G. And it was just supposed to be kind of this funny thing I did at the farmer's market. And ended up, at, like you just pointed out, I can't just do this little thing. I ended up getting this awesome retail space, and now it's like this thing. So Google doesn't really like it that the name is so closely associated with that
Boston company. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I recognize that there's a good chance that I could get a letter from them, but the mountain range that's here in New Paltz, New York, is the Shawangunk Mountain Range, and people refer to it as the Gunks. So that was where it came from, and all the donuts had fun like names associated with climbing culture, and then Google doesn't like it. I realized that there's a large tourist community here that doesn't even realize that mountain range is called the Shawangunks, and they don't get it at all. but at the same time, I'm personally setting up production, training staff, getting this fully functional. I don't have my team from Montclair with me full time. They've come up here and there, and it's the first time in 10 years I've been on my own doing
this thing,
and which I adore. You know, it's great to get back in it, like you know, really in the trenches. And but you know, in doing it, I'm like, wow, this is so easy. Because we're just making donuts. Like there's, you know, we have like 10 ingredients that we inventory every day. Our menu changes monthly, so we are able to incorporate different ingredients and run them out, and then, you know, do it again next month. And then I'm looking at the Montclair bread, you know, year end, and looking at the inventory and getting the frantic text messages because we're out of this, or they didn't deliver that, or we're out of, you know. And I was like, you know what? First off, I spent 2 months thinking I was going to sell Montclair Bread Company because, like, I just couldn't handle my brain can't handle it anymore.
Sure.
And then I had this epiphany that I don't have to sell it. I just need to make it simple, like the New Paltz location. So we are going to be announcing this huge rebranding on March 21st, the first day of spring, is when it's going to be made public. But both bakeries are going to be under the same brand. And it's just going to be donuts. And with that, we're going to be able to start wholesale production for donuts, which is something that I get asked about all the time. And I turn down because I don't have the capacity for it. But by eliminating all of the other things, the bread, for example, we'll be able to provide that, you know, and we'll still be able to continue making our breakfast sandwiches and things like that. And we will still continue to make our own breads for those. But like you were saying, that you learned from Amy, I did as well. I use a brioche dough for my donuts, which is the same thing that I use for my burger buns. And I make a sourdough donut. It makes a really beautiful sourdough focaccia. It's vegan. It's just, you know, a really simple sourdough, you know, so we can do all of this and eliminate all of these ingredients. We actually just had a staff retreat and went through this workshop of eliminating ingredients, and we're able to go from like 300 ingredients down to 20.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
And I always like say things like this, but I don't really know until the year end and I look. Bread only makes up 11% of our sales. So all of those ingredients and all of that labor is only making up 11% of what we bring in.
Wow.
Probably like at more than 50% of the day.
Yeah. And space too. Hey,
absolutely.
Like it takes so much space. Yeah.
We're actually able to take out our walk-in refrigerator and freezer and then just move to reach-in units and have more floor space.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to be retarding sourdough. I mean, the sour donuts, they're a 36-hour process, but they're room temp the whole time.
Well, and a tub's going to get you more product than a tub of bread dough, right? Like, you know, the number of loaves versus number of donuts, you're going to.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Gee whiz. Yeah. Well, you know, and that's something. So our bakery in Regina was, you know, like 1200 square feet. And we try, you know, we keep the display cases full and we're always trying new things. But even like in a little shop like ours, we had so many ingredients and I had like seven different like suppliers or places to go because we'd get two deliveries in and then flour from the mill. And then I'm making the run to Wholesale Club and I make it, you know, we need once a year, we need, you know, this special type of chocolate and, you know, and I'm just like, I remember one year, you know, I bought a case of almond paste for Christmas. Uh-huh. And it's like, my God, I got to make a lot of Stollen and stuff now to use this up. Cause absolutely. What am I going to do with like, cause we're a small shop, but you got to, you know, get this out of the cooler. Like I got to get this out of here, you know?
I know.
The stressful part of my week was on Fridays, making all the order lists for all these different orders that I had to put in, not making minimums on half of them and trying.
Right. And then you end up getting more stuff in than you need or being short or paying triple at the other supplier.
Yeah. And you know, and like where we lived, the, you know, the butter came every 3 weeks and the flour could come every 2 weeks and, and my head just hurt every Friday. And it was like, and then you say, okay, I need to delegate this. And everybody's like, there is no way, you know, because the first time you delegate it and they order a whole case of pecans, you're done.
Yes. I mean, I'm not kidding. Like, this is exactly what December was like for me. And that's why I'm like, I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not. I'm just it's scary. And it's a little bit sad. I don't want to give up the bread. But at the end of the day, I can still bake bread if I want bread, you know, and it doesn't have to be.
You can, and you're known for donuts as well. It's still the community. I can sit on the patio and eat them, you know, that kind of thing. Like it.
Well, and it's funny too, because once we started the donuts, which was like year two of the business, I quickly became known as the donut person and I got pigeonholed into it. And so like if the Bread Bakers Guild reached out or any other organization reached out, they wanted me to teach about donuts. And I'm like, but I'm a really good bread baker. And I resented it. And I didn't like being typecast as the donut lady, you know? And then I started embracing it. And, you know, and then all of these great things started happening once I embraced that, okay, I'm going to be the donut lady. And then I got my book deal. And then, you know, it's like, it just kind of started going places from there. And I was able to re-energize, and this big rebranding thing is, it's really exciting for me and scary, but mostly exciting.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Well, and to know that no matter whether you're where you run or where you climb, there's going to be a place for you to work and eat is a good thing.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I won't go hungry.
Yeah. You do all this rock climbing over here. What it needs is a donut shop. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened because everybody, you know, I would, it's just like running any outdoor activities. You start talking to people around you and, oh, what do you do? Well, I make donuts. And they're like, oh, you should bring us some. So then like the next time I come out, I bring donuts. And then I was bringing like, you know, 1 week I brought like 20 dozen donuts up from Montclair to New Paltz to deliver to people. And this was just like gifting them, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's like, okay, I got to figure out a system where people can order and pay and I deliver these donuts.
Yeah.
And that finances my rock climbing adventures. You know, I just need to be able to like pay for what I'm doing up here.
Love it.
And then one of the other business owners, she found me at the farmer's market and introduced me to her landlord. And, you know, the next thing I knew, I was signing a lease. Oh, so, wow.
Good for you. Love it. Yeah. Oh, well, good luck with that too. I'm sure it's all going to go fine, but I'm excited for the shift and for the opportunities that it opens up for you, you know,
and maybe
the baggage that it lets you cut loose as well.
Yeah. I'm really excited.
Okay. Sorry. I got to ask you because when the place is called Montclair Bread Company, mm-hmm. and now you're making this change and it's like, well, we're not going to do bread anymore, except for some exceptions. Mm-hmm. I know folks that could be a deal breaker, just that sort of sunk cost of, but this is the name.
Yeah. I'm changing the name. And you know, this is something that it's funny because COVID did this to us. COVID kind of took away our fear or my fear in a lot of ways. It's like, you know what, I'm just going to do it. And then we'll see what happens. Like I still have customers, even though we went through the 2 years, like the worst 2 years ever. So for years, I kept saying, if I could do it all over again, I would just be a donut shop. If I could, you know, and then I'm like, wait a minute, I can do it all over again. There's nothing that says I have to stay Montclair Bread Company, you know, and I have to do what's going to work for me and my family over the long haul. And I realize that that might upset some people, but at the end of the day, it's going to feed my soul and it's going to make my life easier. And I'm going to be able to continue to host all of these community things because my business is healthy and my family is healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally. You can't help people in need from a position of deep need of your own, right? Like you've got to at least be on steady ground a little bit to reach out and do that.
I mean, and I remember, and of course, I think Montclair Bread Company, the name in and of itself has a lot more goodwill than, you know, my personal name. But
sure.
When I was divorced, I went back to using my maiden name and I was so terrified that would be career suicide because anything that had been published about me and Montclair Bread Company was in my married name. And it wasn't that big of a deal. And like occasionally people still use that name or my current name, but they find me. And, you know, and it was funny, I was talking to my dad and my dad's pretty old school. And I thought he would be the biggest opponent to me changing my name back. And he's like, do people even know your last name or do they just know Rachel? I was like, fair point, Dad.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Rachel from the bakery.
Yeah. So, you know, the same goes for Montclair Bread Company. They know the address, they know where it's located. They've been coming for the last 10 years. So there's still going to be a bakery there. We're still going to be the same faces.
I think I might've talked over you. You are going to change the name. Is that?
We are changing the name. Yeah. And that actually, I was working on launching this wholesale donut business, like an independent of my bakery my retail bakery. And I went through this whole like brainstorming session with this group of people. And we came up with this name for this new concept. And it was just so, it resonated so much with me and who I am and what I've built. And there was a bakery located in this space on Walnut Street when I opened it, and the couple, they were retiring and moving. And so I bought their equipment and everything, and I bought their lease from them. And they were called the Bread Company. And I wanted to maintain some continuity, so I called it the Montclair Bread Company. And I never really went through creating a name and a brand around my vision, because I was just trying to keep some continuity and faith. And, you know, it turned out that a lot of people didn't like that bakery. And I spent years trying to overcome what I had done. And I still feel some of that to this day, even though Montclair Bread Company is, you know, prospered, I still have that kind of resentment. And so this is a real opportunity for me to purge and really create my vision and how I should have done it from the beginning.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. I'm so excited for you.
Yeah. And it's great because now once we set this up, then it's going to be consistent from Montclair to New Paltz. If we do choose to open another location in the future, there's going to be that brand continuity and, you know, you'll be able to know that's what you're getting, you know?
Oh, fantastic. Thanks for doing this. It's so great to talk with you. This has been so much fun.
Yeah, you too. I feel like we're all on these lonely islands as bakers, and it's always great when you get to share your experience and with somebody else that's on their own lonely island.
Exactly.
Literally for you.
quite literally now. I'm literally on an island. And thanks to COVID and my own shyness, most days I am literally lonely. I'm getting better at getting out and stuff, but it's like, this is going to be this spring, I think, is the, okay, it's time to get out and join some things.
It's funny. All of us like overnight bakers are like, we are so made for this. We could do it for years. Really nothing changed for us.
Yeah, exactly. I've got my buddy that roasts my coffee beans. I've got Adam and Jess at their bakery. I go visit them. Yeah,
my boyfriend calls it campus. He's like, we don't leave campus much because it is like you walk to the coffee guy and the bakery and the kids' school, and it's all like on a block, and we don't go beyond that.
No, and even when we had the bakery, I had Dave, my supplier guy, and we'd visit and stuff, and we, you know, more friends with him than just about anybody.
Yeah.
For those first years, it's like, oh yeah.
My delivery guys, I have all their cell phone numbers.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Cool. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Oh my goodness, eh? What a chat. I just had so much fun on this call. I think you heard in my voice. Someone asked me just yesterday, Do you miss the bakery? Do you miss Orange Boot? Do you miss running a bakery every day? And I said, you know, there's parts that I really do miss. There's parts that I don't, of course. And when I was listening back to the talk with Rachel, it was like, you know what I miss? I miss having the ability. I miss having the infrastructure and the tools to do things like Rachel's doing with the feeding folks during the government shutdown, with starting a run sort of associated with the bakery and come on and let's have donuts afterwards, doing those kinds of things and saying, hey, I have this place. Let's do cool things for the community from this place that I have. That's the thing that I miss the most. That's the thing that I'm trying to replace, I guess, with the podcast and with Bakers for Bakers, is saying, well, here's another place where we can get together. Here's a podcast where I can share conversations with you and we can connect that way. And then here's a place in Bakers for Bakers where we can connect more and let's do good things with this place that we have. And it was so inspiring to hear Rachel's stories and then prove once again that I am not a journalist here, because she launched a book last October. It hasn't even been 6 months and I forgot to even talk about it. But I'm looking at the clock thinking we've been talking for ages and you're busy and I want to let you go. And but I still have questions. And so that's the beautiful thing. There's still more to talk about. And so I'm looking forward to talking to Rachel more in the future. Another thing that really grabbed me about this conversation is how again and again and again, Rachel saw something in her community that needed doing. It's like, okay, let's go do it. And that ability to see what's needed and then take action and do something about it is something that I admire very, very much. It was so nice to hear the story straight from Rachel about, you know, what happened and how she went about it. And I think that's something that, you know, we can all take away from this is, okay, look out your window. Look at the folks coming into your shop. What needs doing and how can you help? Let's work on our ability to see and then take action based on what we're seeing. And then the last thing, you know, this idea of just embracing it. Right at the end of the talk when she was talking about making the shift at her bakery to just being, we're going to be about donuts and embracing this idea that, yeah, I'm the donut lady. And she said, you know, once I embraced that I was the donut lady, everything started taking off for me. Maybe there's something that we're all kind of resisting and we need to embrace. And so I'm going to be reflecting on that a lot. And I invite you to reflect on that as well. Love to hear what you come up with. Okay, thanks for listening this week. It's been a lot of fun. Reach out if you want to talk, if you want to connect, I'm always available. It's Mark with a K at riseuppod.com. Would love to hear from you. If you haven't joined Bakers for Bakers yet, come and sign up, bakers4bakers.org. Maybe we'll see you on the Getting to Know You call next week on Tuesday on Zoom. That'd be a lot of fun. We'll see you then. Until next week, work hard, bake lots, get outdoors if you can, go for a run if that's your thing, climb rocks if that's your thing. Happy baking. Bye-bye.